This man's legal name is Flavor Flav. Counselor, I'll allow it.
Yeah, boy!
We're surrounded by super powerful forces.
Once they get you in their jails, they can figure out ways of keeping for a long time, Caesar.
The workers don't have the vote.
It can only be attributable to human error.
The new immigrants in many places, many of them are not citizens. Most of them don't speak the language.
Destino del poder de esta estación armada y en perfecto y completo.
You are now tuned into Fear of a Border Planet.
Hey, good evening, gents.
Hey, welcome back.
What up, what up, what up? Party people in the place to be.
Yeah, good to see you guys. Yeah, what are we talking about today?
Well, on this installment of the one and only Fear of a Border Planet, we're going to get into the one and only, the man with the iconic villainous drawl coming straight out of Atlanta, Georgia, 21 Savage, in our fun section. And we're going to be discussing his immigration situation and as well.
Yeah, not quite straight out of Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah. I mean, he's a child of Atlanta, but
we get into that.
That's a little preview.
And then, of course, we're also going to be diving into some immigration subjects as well, mainly the DACA program. Those of you who are familiar have heard the term dreamers when it comes to the immigration debate. We're going to break that down, what this means.
That's right.
What the status of the program is now, all that good stuff.
That sounds great. Our listeners must be watering at the mouth already. No, but seriously, we've been waiting to talk about this for a while. Yeah. I think it was one of the first things we thought about when, like, what if we made a podcast about immigration and hip-hop? Oh, we got to talk about 21 Savage.
Yeah, it's probably
so
one of the most...
applaud our restraint.
One of the most obvious cases of the intersection.
Exactly. So before we dive in, let me just tell our listeners, if you're here for the first time, welcome. We're so glad that you've tuned in. We hope you don't regret it, but you might. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. We're so glad we haven't scared you off by now. You can find us by searching for Fear of a Border Planet on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. You can find us on Twitter, X, and Instagram at Border Planet Pod. You can also find us on borderplanetpod.wordpress.com. And we're bringing this episode to you. We're recording in the month of March 2024.
Mm-hmm. Been a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Nelson, you went to a show recently, right? Didn't you go to a Dilla commemorative show?
Yes. Dilla? So this past February, we celebrated in the great city of Detroit the legacy of one of, if not hip hop's greatest producer, Jay Dilla, who this year was actually, would have been his 50th birthday. So it was a special occasion. And
oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Nice.
Born in 74.
Born 1 year after hip hop, 1 year after the 50th hip-hop anniversary.
And so, you know, of course, yeah, like Rama said, big rest in peace to Dilla, rest in beats. It was an amazing event that the Dilla World folks put on with the blessing of Ma Dukes and the Yancey Clan. They had a showcase with live bands, like playing and recreating Dilla beats. Guilty Simpson and Fat Cat both performed. I had a conversation with Dan Charnas, author of Dilla Time.
Oh, yeah.
Got a book signed.
You got Charnas to sign Dilla Time.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
Man.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Sky Zoo out of Brooklyn, but I had a conversation with him too because he was performing the next night at Marble Bar, which was like the big tribute show kind of event. So it was him and Elzai and Boldy James.
Wow, some legends. If it's not obvious to you listeners by now, Detroit is the place to be.
Oh yeah, we premier spot for hip hop, and it just don't stop.
Let's dive in. So we're calling this episode Dreams Deferred plus 21 Savage. But why Dreams Deferred? That's because when we think about Dreamers in the DACA program, we think about really a 20-year history of political promises to this group of people that have never been lived up to. And by this group of people, as you probably know, we're talking about immigrants who were brought to the United States as children without status and who have never been able to achieve lawful status. And we've had people on both sides of the political aisle talking for years, and it's gotten seemingly so close so many times, but never close enough, such that you have people who are now adults who've been living with these unkept promises that they will be granted a path to citizenship, a path to legal stability, that in the year 2024 has still not been achieved. The only thing that's been done is the DACA program. Let me just get into what that is now and why that is a pathetically inadequate solution for the problem that these hundreds of thousands, if not more than a million, young people in our country face. You had President Obama, I believe in the year 2012, announce the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA. This was a program created by an executive action, not by a law passed by Congress, that basically said, we are going to allow young people who meet these certain criteria to apply to be put on the bottom of the list of priorities for deportation. It's not a real status. It's just a temporary situation where they're a low priority for deportation and they're going to get a 2-year work permit. And to qualify for DACA, you have to have arrived in the United States before a certain date in 2007. You have to have arrived without legal status of any kind, meaning that if you arrived with status and then aged out of that status, you're not qualified for this program. And we can get into that more later. You have to not have been convicted of certain crimes. And when you have to have arrived before 2007 and have been under the age of 16 at that time. It is a narrow set of criteria. And while the DACA program does still exist, the one life support, the criteria have never changed. So sometimes you hear people say, oh, don't we have something called DACA? What's with all these, you know, young unaccompanied children? Like when I think it was about 2014, 2015, 2016 was when we had large groups of unaccompanied minors, mostly from Central America, showing up at our southern border. And of course, that's continued every year. But I think 2014 was really the year that those numbers really picked up. And all of those people, by definition, were not eligible for DACA because they were like 7 years too late. So there's just never been anything adequate to protect people in this situation. And even for those who do qualify for DACA, what you get is a program, basically a work permit, that you have to renew every 2 years. You have to pay $500 to renew this thing every 2 years. You submit your application to renew it, and you might not hear back for months. Your DACA might expire while you're waiting to hear back on your DACA renewal. You might lose your job because of that. These situations happen all the time, and they continue to happen to this day. I'm taking a pause here while I review my notes and see what more I want to say. Um, Right. So you have these chronic delays that are still going on. News reports from even this year about people who have counted on getting their DACA renewed within 3 or 4 months, and you know their next renewal comes up and they are submitting their application 4 months in advance, and for whatever reason, with no explanation, their DACA is not getting renewed on time. Suddenly they're panicking. They're going to lose their job. They're going to lose their driver's license that is attached to the date of their work permit and DACA. It's devastating because all we have is this crappy temporary status that is DACA that is in the hands of a pathetically inefficient institution, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS. On top of that, it's easy to lose your DACA. So for one, if your DACA has expired for more than a year, you might not be able to get that DACA back. You basically have to reapply as if you've never had it before. A lot more types of crimes can eliminate your DACA and make you deportable than, say, if you had a green card. Like, in terms of criminal eligibility for DACA, you have something that exists nowhere else in immigration law, a term, serious misdemeanor. What is a serious misdemeanor? I don't know. It's not defined in the immigration code. It's not used anywhere else in immigration law. But if you have DACA and you're convicted of a quote-unquote serious misdemeanor, which can include drunk driving, you can lose your DACA permanently and find yourself deportable from the United States. On top of that, DACA doesn't count as what's called a parole for purposes of what's called adjustment of status. Now, before I barrage you with more crappy legal terms, what that means is that if you have DACA and then you marry a U.S. citizen and that U.S. citizen spouse wants to petition for you, you still have not been admitted or paroled into the United States such that you could get a green card through your spouse within the country. No, you have to go through this other process called consular processing. You've been in the country since you were a kid. You have DACA. You're married to a U.S. citizen. Who cares? You still have to go back to that country that you haven't been to since you were a child and get your visa through the U.S. consulate or U.S. embassy in that country before you can come back and reunite with your spouse. Oh, and you might be barred from reentering the country for a period of years unless you qualify for a waiver that is extremely hard to get. It's a shitty program. It is not enough for the hundreds of thousands of DACA recipients who sustain our economy. This is a group of people who are like very hardworking and fill jobs that we have a shortage for. And now there's very real conversations among courts and judges about completely axing this program. It's never been enough. It never will be enough. And sadly, it doesn't seem to be any growing hope that there's going to be a solution to this problem. And the last thing I'll say before passing it off is that there's also a large group of people who are ineligible for DACA, not just everyone who's showed up after 2007, but even those who showed up before 2007, but showed up with a visa. There's a group of people who we consider documented dreamers, where they did have status, but it was a temporary status when they arrived. And now, once that status has expired, even if they might check every other box of DACA eligibility, they don't qualify, and they can't even get a work permit. A large source country for documented dreamers is India, where you have a lot of children of people from India who came to the United States on temporary work visas like the H-1B visa, And they're in a status such as H4 status, like you're a child of an H1B visa recipient. And suddenly your parents' H1B expires. They decide to stay in the country and they keep you, their H4 visa child, in the country without status. And you're not eligible for DACA. So just, it's a huge example of how glaringly inadequate this program is and how something's got to be done. But both the courts and Congress seem to just keep shafting these group of people in any way possible. Now, Ramos, let me pass it off to you to talk about the courts specifically and how our court system has screwed over this whole group of people.
Yeah, I mean, this DACA has been caught up in litigation from almost the very beginning of its announcement back in 2012, which is really sad to think. You know, Kerry described this program, rightfully so, as small, temporary, narrow, only reaching a handful of the non-citizens that are in the country. And yet somehow it became, you know, we shouldn't be surprised, but it became kind of a scapegoat of, you know, Republicans and right-wing anti-immigrant voices just using DACA to highlight how we're tearing open our borders and we're giving everybody amnesty and how this program is so damaging just because it gave a tiny bit of relief to a tiny bit of people. And the number of lawsuits and legal fights that have been fought over DACA just show how far anti-immigrant voices are willing to go to put a stop to a harmless program for them and a pretty beneficial program for a lot of people. Obviously not nearly enough that those people deserve, but a pretty beneficial program. So this goes all the way back to 2014 when then President Obama tried to expand the DACA program, you know, by expanding the eligibility requirements, also having the program reach certain parents of people who are U.S. citizens. That immediately got wound up in litigation down in Texas. That case ended up going all the way up to the Supreme Court. And because what I think it was Scalia died at that point, because Scalia died, the Supreme Court couldn't come to a decision and was kind of equally locked 4-4 and upheld decisions of lower courts saying that this expanded version of DACA and this version of DACA that applies to parents of Americans, those weren't processed through the correct procedure and therefore couldn't be implemented.
Yeah, I think that was like the June after Scalia's death, which was in March.
Right.
And I think Obama had already tried to replace Scalia with Merrick Garland.
Yep.
And of course, we know how that all went. And so if Merrick Garland had been seated on the court, he might have been the deciding vote to preserve that expansion of DACA. But that's not how it went.
Well, and at least we can reminisce about the good times when Scalia died.
Yeah, those few
months. Exactly.
And you know, and then you know, that was only the beginning of the attacks on DACA. When it came to the 2016 election, DACA was in Trump's sight from the very beginning. And near the beginning of his term, in I think January of 2017, he terminated DACA or tried to terminate DACA. And that got caught up in litigation in New York and in California and I think in D.C., really all over the place. And, you know,
weren't you involved in some of that, Ramesh?
Yeah. So the law school clinic that I was a part of were the lawyers for DACA recipients in New York. So we were the ones litigating the New York case that went up to the Second Circuit. We kind of skipped the Second Circuit in a weird way and ended up getting consolidated with all these other cases at the Supreme Court. In a case that ended up becoming DHS v. Regents, the Regents referring to the Regents of the University of California, because the University of California system actually sued Trump, saying that you're hurting our students by terminating DACA. All these cases got mushed together at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court arguments were more or less look the same as the ones that happened at the Supreme Court in 2014, 2015. This was really about process, that Trump skipped all the necessary steps, didn't check any of the boxes before making such a huge decision to terminate such an important program. And to everybody's shock, including everybody on our legal team, the Supreme Court decided against Trump and said that, actually, yeah, you are an idiot. You did not go through the process that you were supposed to go through. It's clear that you didn't take into account how important this program is to people, and we're not going to let you terminate it just this way. And that was a 5-4 decision with Roberts and, at the time, the four liberal justices, Kagan, Sotomayor, Ginsburg, and Breyer, making up the majority, which again highlights like just how different this case would be if it were brought a year or two later.
Right. Even if you had Roberts deciding the same way now, it wouldn't mm-hmm. matter. It would go the other way.
Yeah.
That's fucking terrifying.
So it just happened at the closing end of this liberal minority that could sometimes get Roberts on their side. They did that with the census case too, where it was 5-4 with Roberts joining the liberals. I just think Roberts probably thinks Trump's an idiot and likes to rule against him. That's the most generous interpretation. But again, this is about process. And so Trump went through the process again. This time tried to do a little bit better and ended up trying to terminate DACA again later that summer. This was in 2020. Our law school clinic filed a new lawsuit or a new legal challenge to the new DACA termination, and got that struck down on the grounds that the Homeland Security Secretary wasn't properly appointed by Trump. Again, off on a technicality.
Oh, I didn't know about that part.
It was an interim appointment, or like an acting appointment that didn't go through the process required in the statute. So it was really, really like getting away on a technicality. But it worked. And
was that like Chad Wolf?
Yeah, Chad Wolf.
Chad Wolf was like the senior official performing the duties
right.
of
exactly.
the Secretary of Homeland Security, mm-hmm. but not actually the Secretary of Homeland Security. Therefore, he couldn't terminate DACA.
Yep, exactly. And there was actually like a really fun window of like 2 months where everybody in the immigration world was making this argument, and judges had like no choice but to be like, yeah, you're right. This guy wasn't lawfully appointed. And so I guess everything he did was not legal. And so that was a fun couple months.
Amazing.
But so that worked.
Nice.
But as is the case with a lot of, you know, anti-immigrant attacks, is that they don't stop. And so at the same time, there's this case going on in Texas that isn't about process, but about DACA itself. You know, even as these cases against Trump were being litigated and won, everybody in the background was kind of afraid, okay, what's going to happen down in Texas? You know, we're just getting off on technicalities, but a case in Texas could ruin the whole program. And, you know, essentially what we feared happened in 2021, where this random judge in Texas heard this random case by Texas claiming that Texas was being harmed because they had to issue driver's licenses to DACA recipients. And somehow that was enough of a harm to get this Texas judge to agree that DACA was illegal. That case went up on appeal. At the same time, now you have Biden in office, who did not do nearly enough to protect DACA and essentially just tried to reissue DACA in a different form, which slowed down the court process. But that same judge said, okay, you might have issued a new rule, but it's the same thing. It's still unlawful.
When you say a random judge, so we're talking about Judge Hainan, and I believe Judge Hainan was the judge who struck down the expanded DACA in 2014. Mm-hmm. And then 7 years later is the same judge who strikes down the original DACA based on the lawsuit by all the Republican states.
Yep. This judge has
somehow these cases keep coming to this Southern District of Texas judge who's just watering at the mouth mm-hmm. to gut this program and strand all these people without status.
Yeah, and they're going to this judge for a reason. It's because this guy has a decade-long right. vendetta against the DACA program, and it's easy to get this judge.
It's essentially judge shopping, mm-hmm. right? Like, so they can, the states bringing the lawsuit choose to bring it in the Southern District of Texas, where there's really not that many federal judges, mm-hmm. your chances of getting Hanen or another whack job Republican appointee are very high.
Totally.
And I think there's even, I forget the name of this rule, but there's like a rule of decorum in the U.S. Senate that when you appoint federal judges, the senators from that state are supposed to approve of them.
Oh, this whole pink slip process or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So it prevents Democrats from appointing like actually like left leaning judges in right wing states and the federal judiciaries of right wing states, which is, should be something decided by the federal U.S. government, whether it's controlled by Democrats or Republicans, ends up being controlled by the Republican senators of that state. And that's why you bring something federal in Texas, mm-hmm. you can be pretty sure you're going to get a fucking whack job decision from one of these insane judges, whether it be on immigration, abortion, trans rights, what have you.
Totally. And then if you file in Texas, this goes up to the Fifth Circuit, which is notorious for being one of the most conservative, like, whack job circuit courts in the country.
Yeah.
Full of Trump-appointed judges who write as if they are, like, Christian nationalists with no regard for any case law or any appeal to some sort of objective standard. And, you know, like Carrie said at the beginning, this is a very narrow, temporary, not good enough program. You know, at the same time, you know, what we saw through litigating these cases is that, you know, it's a tiny set of relief for people, but for the people who get DACA, it means a lot. Even just that little bit. And I wanted to share,
yeah, no question,
one of our plaintiffs in that second lawsuit against the second DACA termination. She tried to apply for DACA in 2017, got all the paperwork together and tried to apply, but just as it was time for her to apply, Trump terminated DACA and she couldn't apply. Years later, in 2020, when the Supreme Court struck down Trump's attempt to terminate DACA and kind of revived the DACA program, she had this kind of new sense of hope, got all the documents together, and days before she was going to submit her DACA application, Trump tried to revoke DACA again, and she couldn't apply for DACA. And she was gonna, at that point, she was months away from becoming old enough where you would start to, it's called unlawful presence. The government would start to right. notice that you're here beyond the kind of limits of your visa or whatever reason you're there. And she would start to accrue this kind of like baggage that she would carry with her throughout any immigration process. And was kind of, you know, desperate to apply, even though Trump tried to terminate DACA again. And luckily, that second termination was stopped in December 2020, just 2.5-3 months before she would have started to get that unlawful presence accrued. And so, you know, this is something that people try to do for years, despite all these attacks on DACA. Some people are successful. Other people, you know, because of all the confusion of these court cases, end up not renewing their DACA or not applying because they don't even know if it's still active. Some right. people think it's just not worth it and think that the only chance they have at stability is to leave the U.S. permanently. And this is exactly what these attacks intended, is to shake up the system enough where even if this program stays in place, which, by the way, it is still, despite all these legal attacks, it's still in place for existing DACA recipients. But this was exactly what the plan was. If that we can't strike it down completely, we will at least shake the foundation so much that we will cause enough confusion where this program means nothing to a lot of people. And unfortunately, they're succeeding. And without any political legislative way to yank all of these fights out of the courts, there's not really going to be a permanent solution. And so, Nelson, do you want to talk about those permanent solutions?
Permanent solutions, or maybe a lack thereof, because sadly, as, you know, the debate around immigration reform in this country has evolved, especially recently within the past even 6 months to a year or so. You know, on both sides of the aisle, it's been getting increasingly right-wing and increasingly hostile towards immigrants, mm-hmm. and that includes Dreamers, because, you know, they've been trying to hammer out a bipartisan deal. Biden, our commander-in-chief, good old Genocide Joe, as they call him, has been trying to work with House Democrats and Democrats in the Senate to pass a military funding bill that would send military funding aid to Ukraine and Israel to continue the wars going on in both respective countries, including the genocide that is still being perpetrated against the people of Palestine.
Listen to episode 6 for more about that and for some dope bars from Palestinian rappers.
Yes, indeed, indeed. In order to get any movement and any political, you know, support from the GOP side, they were initially demanding harsh immigration reform. So that means further militarizing the border, more restrictions on asylum, and, you know, folks who could come into this country, implementing more of those kind of Trump-era policies. They had a deal going for a minute that was going to implement those harsher immigration policies. And this was fully endorsed by the Democrats as well, which, you know, going back even, you know, not super long, those kinds of policies would be considered like wholly conservative, wholly Republican. Democrats wouldn't be banging this kind of drum out in the open. But because the rhetoric around immigrants and even, you know, mainstream narratives on both sides, you know, whether conservative or, you know, quote unquote liberals, the border is a crisis now and there's all these people flooding over it and we have to deal with it and we have to find a way to deal with all of these people coming over.
Right. The amount, the extent to which that has become just like an undisputed fact among like the leftist establishment, leftist media, the border crisis.
Yeah.
It's like, what? When did we just arrive at that conclusion? When did we just like just walk right into the right wing nativist camp?
Yeah.
And just say, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, this is true, actually.
Mm-hmm.
What? And like, right. Like we used to say, there used to be negotiations. Okay, we'll exchange border funding, border militarization for a path to status for Dreamers and for other immigration reforms. That four went completely out the window. It got replaced with military
funding. Yeah, militarism.
With no benefit for Dreamers, no benefit for people without status in this country.
And
it's so goddamn depressing.
It's been very hard to watch how, yes, because the Democrats have now taken largely a hardline militaristic kind of role and position internationally, because the Democrats are so dedicated to these causes, they're willing to just completely fold on domestic issues like the border. So they're able, you know, they were completely willing to further militarize the border and cut off routes to asylum for folks coming in and put it Dreamers in further danger, et cetera, et cetera. This plan did not end up following through because, ironically enough, Trump decided to kill it by vocally voicing his disapproval for the bill, meaning the rest of the Republican Party had to fall in line and now go against the bill that they had helped craft and contained most of the things that they were asking for in terms of hardline, harsh immigration policies.
Right. So in Congress, you have the complete abandonment of this issue that used to be like a pet issue for many Democrats.
Yeah.
And in the Supreme Court, you have them potentially hearing an appeal from the Fifth Circuit maybe in the next term. I mean, we're expecting the Fifth Circuit to rule that the whole program is illegal. And that will go up to the Supreme Court, and we will finally get the word from them, from this group of nut jobs, about whether this program can stand. So, you know, take a shot of whiskey, because it seems like the hope for a path to status for this group of people has never seemed fainter than it does now.
Yeah, and it's pretty depressing that even like our wildest hopes of a path to status or some permanent DACA program of some sort, like you said, Carrie, and like you said, Nelson, like every immigration benefit, every immigration relief always comes in a package with increased border security, border militarization. And like, it just makes me think back to that quote of like, you know, when you're saying you're paying for border security, you're paying for border militarization, increasing security, you're increasing border violence. Like you're literally saying, I want more money to see more people get hurt, to see more people get killed, more people get, I mean, yeah. It's
more people caged, more people yeah. abused.
And that's the best case. We get a package.
Yeah.
I mean, I truly predict, too, that we're going to have a decision from Supreme Court in a year and a half or so that's almost as cataclysmic as the Dobbs, you know, decision overturning Roe. I think the Supreme Court will end the DACA program. And that means revoke status of the, what, still 700,000 people who have DACA, mm-hmm. who all then just lose their jobs and become undocumented. I mean, you already have DACA recipients, like Ramos alluded to, deciding that it's better to just leave the U.S. and return to countries they haven't lived in since they were young children than stay here in this limbo. We're just shooting ourselves in the foot. Like, you think fucking bum-ass white American dudes who sit around drinking beer and watching sports contribute more to society than these young people who work this hard to get a fucking work permit? Like, god damn.
Yeah.
We are shooting ourselves in the foot.
It's stunning to see. Because like you said, Carrie, this did used to be like a big pet issue for Democrats.
Right.
Trying to keep this program alive. And now, as soon as there's war brewing overseas and, you know, there's a chance to have a big standoff with Russia and to finally, you know, support Israel's push to completely take over the Gaza Strip, as has been their intention for many years, you know, they jump at the chance to accomplish those, you know, militaristic goals internationally and abandon the folks who are here in this country who have lived here most of their whole lives.
Shit, this is grim.
Yeah.
Should we just listen to some 21 Savage now?
Well, sounds, I think like so.
Any final thoughts?
Well, shouts out to all the dreamers out there.
Seriously, stay strong, friends.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna, you know, we keep going regardless. We keep finding new ways to fight the bastards.
And there's people out here who have your back and allies who haven't forgotten about how fucking important this issue mm-hmm. is and how much of a fucking outrage it is that there's never been a resolution to this problem.
My brother lost his life and it turned me to a beast. My brother got life and it turned me to the streets. I've been through the storm and it turned me to a G. But the other side was sunny, I get paid to rap on beats. How much money you got? A lot. How many problems you got? A lot. How many people done doubted you? A lot. Left you out to rot? A lot.
Oh, Nelson, why don't you tell us about 21 Savage?
Well, the 21 Savage, a.k.a. Shia bin Abraham Joseph, born in London in 92, and his parents separated when he was young, and he went and moved to the States with his mother and moved to Atlanta and has lived there ever since. was involved in the streets and gang life from a young age. His brother was killed in a shooting during an attempted drug deal when he was young, and he ended up dropping out of high school to join the local blood gang and, you know, be selling drugs on the streets, robbery, car theft, et cetera, et cetera. In 2011, his right-hand man, one of his best friends, was killed in a shootout. And then 2 years later, during an attempted robbery on his 21st birthday, he was shot 6 times by rival gang members, and his best friend, Johnny, was killed. And so after that, he decided to get out of the street life and really just focus on his music career. And he debuted his mixtape. His debut mixtape, The Slaughter Tape, was released in 2015. And it was the project that really started to get him some attention. In 2016, he was freshman class by XXL and continued to, you know, pick up steam. 2017, he dropped a debut studio album, Issa Album, and that did really well. And so, you know, he continues to go on, drop more music, work with a lot of Atlanta hip hop royalty, Young Thug, Gucci Mane, Metro Boomin, you know, really just blew up. And then in 2019, which we're going to get into some more, he got into some immigration issues based off of, you know, as I previously mentioned, the fact that he was born in London and moved to the U.S. as a kid, which sort of maybe y'all can now see what the connections were forming here with our themes. But eventually he managed to, you know, get his way out of those issues. And since then, he's just continued to be doing great. Dropped a joint album with Drake recently. Dropped a new album just this past year. And that's been doing...
Which is called American Dream.
American Dream, yep. And that one's also been doing very well. So despite the violence that he has, unfortunately, you know, had to deal with throughout his life, including his half-brother in 2020, who was stabbed to death in London.
Jesus.
So, you know, unfortunately, he's experienced this much loss and this much violence, but he has continued to put his all into his music and use the profits to give back to his community. He's one of those kinds of people that has come back to the hood and made an effort to reduce violence and help folks who, you know, are in need. So shouts out to 21.
Seriously. And yeah, we wanted to feature him with the dreamer conversation because he is a dreamer. He was brought to the United States as a child, and years later, as an adult, he still had to pay the price for that. And actually, I think that he would qualify as a documented dreamer, because my understanding is that his mother came on an H-2A visa or H-2B, and that he was in H-4 status, which I alluded to earlier. It's a temporary status for children of people on temporary work visas. So when his mother's visa expired, he was no longer in status, and he was ineligible for DACA, even though he did arrive before the age of 16, before the year 2007, and should have otherwise been eligible for the program. But instead, he finds himself being swooped up by ICE in 2019 as an adult, once he's a superstar, over being a British citizen. But Ramis, why don't you give us some more detail about that whole situation?
Yeah, finally connecting the dots between 21 Savage and immigration. So yeah, Nelson gave it away. Man was born in London, not Atlanta, believe it or not. I don't know where you listeners were in 2019, but if you were on Twitter on February 3rd, 2019, you were the shocked recipient of thousands of memes about 21 Savage actually being British, because on February 3rd, 2019, he was arrested by ICE it came out that he was a British citizen who had been in the U.S. unlawfully for 10, 15 years at that point. You know, he came in 05, and his visa expired in 06. He was stuck in ICE detention for 10 days. I don't know, for the people who are kind of involved in the immigration law world, at least me, didn't have much hope that he would see a way to stay in the U.S., but
no,
not at all, right? It would just, you know, it would suck to just ship off verses from London for the rest of your life.
Seriously, like, I mean, I do criminal defense now, but I practice immigration law. You have convictions for gun offenses. You've been undocumented since 2006, and you're facing up against some white-ass immigration judge who wants to deport the shit out of you, and your lyrics are full of references to violence and drugs. I thought no way in hell this guy could face up against this system. But we got the good news. Maybe I'll play that clip next. We got the good news just this past fall that he got his green card. Yeah, maybe I can dive into the good news, because it first came from a Drake song called 8 a.m. in Charlotte.
Waiting on cinch in the lobby, that boy a lobbyist. Savage got a green card straight out of the consulate. Where I go, you go, brother, we Yugoslavian. Formal is a dress code, dawg. So many checks owed, I feel Czechoslovakian. What the?
Savage got a green card straight out the consulate. That is actually technically legally incorrect, because no one actually gets a green card at a consulate. Not that I give Drake any credence here, but if there's any nugget of truth in there, maybe 21 did have to go through consular processing, so he might have actually had to go back to the UK, go to the US consular, US embassy to the UK, and get a visa there with which he would come back to the US and it would be stamped, and then he would have a green card. So it's kind of a petty distinction, but Drake, you just don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I do like the so many checks owed via the Czechoslovakian
line. I was taking issue with the consulate line of those bars and not the Yugoslavian Czechoslovakian line.
I heard that. I was like, Drake is so dumb.
And then I think 21's first international show was with Drake in Toronto, and there's this whole walkout.
Her Majesty Charles III and the Great Office of State in the United Kingdom. The message I have been instructed to deliver is as follows. To whom it may concern, Shia bin Abraham Joseph, known professionally as 21 Savage, is now cleared to travel abroad and perform his live band. We are excited for his return to the United Kingdom, but he has chosen Toronto as his first destination. Ladies and gentlemen.
Let me do it. Ladies and gentlemen, performing for the first time outside of America in his life. Make some noise for my brother, 21!
Okay, yeah. So, he got his green card. He's touring internationally, and he had some selfie like next to the Eiffel Tower, like all dripped out in like Dior shit that he had got on the Champs-Elysees. So he's living his best life now. He's got his issues resolved. But yeah, like as someone who's practiced in this field, knowing that he has like those types of convictions, shocking. He's got his immigration lawyer, Charles Cook, out of Atlanta. That's a good ass lawyer.
And speaking of Charles Cook, do you wanna explain what Charles Cook revealed as to how?
Oh,
yeah, you have theories about this.
Yeah. So, Carrie, the White Wizard, has some theories about how
the White Wizard is cunning.
How 21 might have gotten the green card. Now, I don't know, and I'm not trying to make any enemies here.
Lock your door
Cook
tonight.
Has said. Yeah, right. Lock the door. Cook has said that 21 had various different options of a path to status. But one of those options was a U visa. Now, for those who are unaware, a U visa is a special type of visa for victims of crimes who have cooperated and remain willing to cooperate with law enforcement. Now, what Cuck said when this first came out is that the crime in question for which he might have qualified for the U visa was the shooting on 21 Savage's 21st birthday when he got shot 6 times, that he did apparently cooperate with police during that. And here's the other thing. The U visa can waive certain grounds of inadmissibility that cannot be waived for other types of visas, like having a family-sponsored visa. So his U visa really might have been his only path to overcome the fact that he had certain convictions. And I know that at least one of his convictions did get dismissed or vacated, possibly, and I don't know exactly why, but it might have been due to like the lack of immigration advice that he had gotten under the case Padilla versus Kentucky. You can go back and say someone didn't knowingly plead guilty because they weren't advised or made knowing of the possible immigration consequences. You can do like a post-conviction relief motion about that. So that might have gotten him around the conviction such that he could have gotten a family-based visa. But I think this guy got a U visa. I think he did. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I think he should go, if it's true, I think he should go public about it so that there's less of a stigma about, you know, reporting a crime. Not saying that everyone should be snitches and rats, but, you know, especially if your legal status is on the line, people in the culture have got to forgive talking to the cops just a little bit to get that status that they need. Just my thought. And I'll play here. I'll have to add it in post. But a certain track from 21's album Savage Mode 2, which incredibly, he gets Morgan Freeman to provide commentary in this album.
A regular citizen who reports seeing a crime isn't a snitch or a rat. The criminals were just sloppy. Snitches and rats are not the same thing. Let me break it down to make sure y'all see what I mean. A snitch is someone minding other folks' business to find information they can sell for a price or trade for some other form of compensation. A rat is a traitor, a conceiver, planner, or physical participator. He doesn't sell secrets for power or cash. He betrays the trust of his team or his family, hoping to save his own cowardly ass. The difference is, at least a snitch is human, but a rat is a fucking rat. Period.
It goes from March of the Penguins to a 21 Savage album. Are you kidding me?
Morgan Freeman also does like Doritos commercials. So I'm. I did love though that he did all the skits on Savage Mode 2 with 21 and Metro Boomin. That was a stroke of just pure.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's great. Genius.
Maybe this is 21 signaling that he's not a rat, but he's like maybe just an itty bitty bit of a snitch such that he could obtain a U visa. Just pure speculation, folks.
He's playing the long game, setting up a foundation. Mm-hmm.
And he also makes the distinction, I remember too, between like snitches, rats, and also just civilians who talk to the police. And it's just like, and if you're a civilian, it's like that's almost expected of you. Like you're not expected to follow up to the street code of like you can't snitch and talk to the police. That only applies to if you're in that life.
Yeah, he definitely, Morgan Freeman lays out some gradation of blame, and I think it's so that 21 can place himself at the least blameworthy end of the spectrum, but to get that U visa still. Just a thought. My door is locked.
I think you might have gotten it.
21's gonna hear.
He's gonna roll up to me. Pussy. And suddenly I'm the ops.
Snitches and rats. Snitches and rats. Snitches and rats. They all get wet. Pussy told on his brother. Pussy.
all the rappers that we've talked about, all the hip-hop artists that we've talked about on this podcast have been, like, more or less conscious rappers. You go through them all. Our first episode and our the namesake of our podcast, Public Enemy, obviously conscious rappers. Akon had some conscious songs that we talked about. It is a little more of a party rapper. We covered the Fugees, definitely conscious rappers. Black Star, absolutely.
Very political.
We had our episode about lyrics about Court. There was a lot of good, you know, legal references there that could be called conscious rap. And of course, we had our Palestinian rappers who were highly, highly conscious and, you know, liberation minded about their situation. And then we have 21 Savage. Now, maybe you can give a defense of 21 Savage as a conscious rapper, but, you know, I love listening to him, but I wouldn't put him in that category.
Yeah, lyrics wise, you know, maybe. But, you know, there's this, you know, Billboard interview where, you know, it says he feels a responsibility to use his platform to advocate for those like him. And, you know, I think one thing is clear, you know, conscious lyrics or not, he's a big advocate for his community. You know, the money he sees goes to a lot of people in a lot of places. And I guess, you know, people have their own ways of expressing their politics. And I guess that's 21 Savage's way.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, I don't think I'd classify him either as like a conscious artist, so to speak, in the same way that you would talk about like a Black Star or a Fugees or anything like that. But I think he is still able to be conscious and be political without needing to be classified as like that kind of artist, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think I may have mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. Back in 2019, that when he got grabbed by ICE, it was like a few days after he came out with the video for A Lot. And his verse in the music video, it's a slightly different verse than what you'll hear on like the single or the album version, where he includes a line calling out the family separation policy that Trump was currently enacting at the time on the southern border, you know, tearing families apart at the border and caging children and all this. And like 21 was starting to get outspoken about that. And then as soon as he drops that video with that line in it, a few days later, ICE comes knocking at the door saying, hey, there's a problem with your status.
Right. There was retaliation there. And I think there is clearly retaliation there. And I think it was actually a traffic stop on his car by a DEA officer who then handed him over to ICE. And then like it was clearly like ICE motivated, but there might have been some DEA involvement. And what Savage says is that as soon as they stop him, he hears them say, "We got Savage."
Yeah.
Like they're clearly after him. It's not just like a rant. Right. And there might have even been some like First Amendment issues with resolving his situation. I had copied down a quote from one of his songs on American Dream called Nana or Nina or however you pronounce that thing that's not a word. That's the title to his song. Where he says on that song, "I spent $500,000 on dismissals." I hear that. I'm like, oh, what kind of dismissals? Probably is talking about, you know, post-conviction relief in Fulton County, Georgia, talking about maybe dismissal of removal proceedings in immigration court from his lawyer, Charles Cuck. Yeah, that'll run you up $500,000 for just a few dismissals.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of song lyrics, Nelson, you want to jump into some of his greatest hits?
Yeah, there are a few of the ones. My personal favorite, of course, we were listening to it a little bit earlier, but A Lot is the 21 Savage song that both got me interested in him as an artist and the one that I kind of come back to the most. I think that chorus is just really haunting.
It's really good.
Visceral and vivid kind of imagery that he works with in this. You can feel the weight of it almost in as he raps, how much money you got, A Lot, how many problems you got, how many people done doubted you, left you out to rot, how many players you fought, how many pray that you flop, how many lawyers you got, how many times you got shot, how many you shot, how many times you ride, how many done died, how many times you cheat, lie, how many times you leave, cry, like, oh my God, just very, yeah. And I think he's also, you know, as well as those kinds of autobiographical, very dark, gritty, visceral kinds of verses that you get from 21, he's also, I think, got a lot of just very, like, great fun one-liners and punchlines that will make me wince or chuckle or maybe do both at the same time. Like on I Love Runnin' with Metro Boomin that he did off of Savage Mode 2. I Ain't With the Rap Beef, Draco Pedophile, All of My Ops Get Touched.
Like, God. Like, that might have gone over my head, but I get it, and I'm sure I like that. I get it.
Like, yeah, right, exactly. Like, it's one of those lines. It kind of makes you groan, but also chuckle a little at the same time.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this one, also from the American Dream album, from the song "Pop Your Shit." He's talking about how dank his weed smells. He's like, "What you smoking, Uncle Snoop? It smelled like gas. I think somebody pooped." Like, what? Why is that in a rap song?
Oh my God, that's great. I think when he works with J. Cole too, I like their dynamic a lot. No pun intended.
Because J. Cole is on a lot. What else is he on?
But, well, 21 is on Cole's song, My Life, off of
that's a great song.
Off Season. Yeah.
That's great.
And his verse is very, like, you know, another one of those just haunting but very almost uplifting too. Like, say what, the stuff I've seen got me traumatized. I'll let the K go when Johnny died, swinging that motherfucker to the side. We don't participate with that squashing shit. All we believe in is homicide. I got a good heart, so I send teddy bears every time we make their mamas cry.
Which is a fucked up line, but that's a great song. I'll probably cut in a clip of that.
But I done made it through the pain and strife. Is my time now, my world, my life, my life.
Say what? The stuff that I seen got me traumatized. I let the K go when Johnny died. Swinging that motherfucker side to side. We don't participate, ain't with that squashy shit. All we believe in is homicide. I got a good heart, so I send teddy bears every time we make their mamas cry. I pray that my past ain't ahead of me, 21. When I'm in love, I love heavily. Oh, if you betray me, you dead to me, 21. I disrespect you respectfully. Mm-hmm. I
got some problems. And then with Morey on that, too. Yeah, that's a great track.
Well, that might be a good transition to, you know, a recent quote from 21. On the one hand, we have him saying, I got a good heart, so I send teddy bears every time I make their mamas cry. And then just, you know, maybe less than a year after saying that lyric, he comes out and says, yeah, most of my lyrics are fake.
Yeah.
Ramis, you want to talk about why he made that statement?
Yeah, so there's this, you know, as I'm sure anyone who is, you know, even a semi-fan of hip-hop music is aware, there's this big RICO trial of Young Thug and YSL, that whole crew, that's been going on for a while now. It's been kind of dominating hip-hop headlines here and there. And, you know, you see it come up on Twitter, on Instagram, clips here and there of lawyers, usually like just like old white lawyers reciting rap lyrics off of, you know, whoever's on the stand.
Hey, if I can be an old white lawyer like Brian Steele, I'll take it.
Yeah, we all aspire to it.
People were saying online, like, if Young Thug ever gets out, that the audio of the lawyers, the old white people, like, reading his lines in court, it's going to make for, like, a fire album intro.
Oh, it's got to happen.
Yeah,
there was one clip where one of his lawyers were like, Thug stands for truly humbled under God. And everybody's like, oh, he's going off. Like,
I think that was in Brian Steele's opening at the trial.
Even the lawyer has bars.
But unfortunately, all these bars that these lawyers are spitting, a judge determined that those lyrics can be used against Young Thug and against the YSL crew. And that, you know, has been kind of an open question for a while now, as far as like what role do rap lyrics play in criminal prosecutions, when it comes to the First Amendment, when it comes to art. There has been cases that have gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. There was a case, Alonis v. U.S. back in, I think, 2015 or 2016, that had to do with whether, you know, threats in rap lyrics could be used to kind of implicate someone in a crime. You know, unfortunate result for this RICO case, where a judge says someone's rap lyrics can be used against them. A few rappers are taking note and doing the smart thing and coming out and saying, everything I've rapped about is a lie. It's all made up. 21 Savage said that. I think he told Rolling Stone, my lyrics are fiction as hell. I just think of it in my head. Some of it be based off real life, but a lot of it be creative stories. And whether or not that's true, if I were his lawyer, I would advise him to say that. Fat Joe said the same thing. Yeah. He lies in 95% of his lyrics. And, you know, it's a protective measure, you know, whether or not it's true, whether or not your lyrics are based on creative stories in your head or real life stories that you faced. You know, now that it's becoming more and more of a reality that your lyrics can be used against you, it's the smart thing to do.
Yeah, it seriously is. Unfortunately, I mean, I wish I could tell my clients that whatever they put in a fucking SoundCloud song, whatever they post on YouTube, can't be used against them. But I can't say that anymore.
Yeah.
I really can't. I mean,
no, not in the digital age.
Not in the digital age. And like, I wish I could say that we had strong enough First Amendment precedents to say our First Amendment protects against your artistic rap expression being used against you in that way. We don't have strong enough precedents for that. And yeah, I think the specific example that got brought up in the Young Thug trial was, so they're trying to connect Young Thug, and this is the Fulton County DA, the same DA's office that's prosecuting Trump and all those other guys in also a RICO trial happening at the same time.
Super random.
Fonnie Willis going after both of these. She's practicing on the rappers before going after the president and his cronies. Like, one of the opening arguments against Young Thug and his crew was that there's a Young Thug lyric where he says 50 shots in a Tahoe. And that lyric was in a song that came out not long after there was a shooting in Atlanta where about 50 gunshots into a Chevy Tahoe were made and some people died. And they're like, oh, well, he's just there confessing to it in the lyrics. It's like, fuck no. Where are you supposed to draw creative inspiration from other than, like, the news and current events? And yeah, I mean, need I say? It's like, you know, we don't think Martin Scorsese is like a fucking heavy mobster because he's making these movies. It's just, it's racist.
I mean, I do, but no one will listen to me.
You're the only guy out there trying to, you know, blow the whistle on Scorsese.
Trying to prove that Scorsese's with the mob for real.
But yeah, I mean, the racism point is real. I mean, this is like this, the First Amendment is really strong until it comes to black speech, frankly, you know, and the reason we're seeing all these erosions of the First Amendment and all these, you know, all these kind of lyrics being used in criminal convictions is because the people they're using them against are black. And you see that in so many other contexts, you know, even the Second Amendment, you know. People are real Second Amendment purists until a black person picks up a gun.
And
the Panthers proved that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, same way that YSL's proving it right now, because I never heard of any musical artist getting prosecuted using their lyrics before hip-hop came along.
Yeah, totally.
Right. I have one other clip I wanted to play before we call it a night, and this is maybe 21's most grappling with his legal situation or his status as a Brit, which he was so memed and mocked for after this all came out. And his song, is this off Savage Mode 2? Yeah, no, right. Same album with the Morgan Freeman, My Dog. There's a couple verses here that are right on point.
I was coming hard before I came. I ain't know nothing about no visa. I was in a part with the gang. Mars be feeling bad. I try to tell her she is not to blame. No social security, couldn't get a license, but I still didn't complain. I went and got it. I ain't asked for no handout. Little nigga, we are not.
No license, couldn't get social security. Yeah.
Didn't know what a visa was.
didn't know what a visa was. Yeah, why did he never talk about being a Brit? But maybe, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm from Atlanta. I don't want to talk about being British. But also it's like, how is he supposed to, like, grapple with the understanding of that? You know, he comes here as a kid. He's supposed to understand, like, all this shit. And it's the story of so many young undocumented folks who only when they get older they have to learn these realities. And then he says this.
Made the news. 21. Nigga keep talking that UK shit like I don't got AKs.
21.
Like, cause I was born over CD, motherfuckers ain't gonna spray spray.
Fuck.
Put up in your hood, nigga, 911. Y'all better call Mayday.
Yeah, I like that one just cause it's like, you think just cause I'm British, we're not gonna, like, fucking spray you with bullets?
It's, no, it'll just be using muskets, so it'll take longer.
Yeah, that's right. it almost disrupts the, like the world I work in. There's all these presumptions that people from outside of the country are more likely to be criminals, like the criminal alien thing, yeah, which is just not true, but it's just like a stereotype we have to push back against. Here, he's like confronting people who are thinking he's softer for not being from the US, for being a Brit. He's like, oh, don't worry, we'll still fuck you up with our AKs. I just think it's great. All right, I got nothing more to say on this topic. Any last words?
I always leave it. When I was in law school, I taught a class called Hip Hop and Law. And when we talked about rap lyrics, I always left people with this Key and Peele skit called Rap Album Confessions. So yeah, for those listening at home, take that and watch it tonight. It's hilarious, but it's unfortunately a reality for a lot of people.
Rap snitches telling on their business, sit in court and be their own star witness.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to 21. Shout out to all the dreamers out there. Hopefully one day our political climate isn't so shitty to dream to immigrants.
All right. Signing off. Oh, we never even introduced ourselves, but, you know, go back to our previous episodes.
You know us.
You'll hear us.
You know us by now.
But this is Kerry, a.k.a. the White Wizard, signing off.
Oh, I didn't think of one. This is Ramis, a.k.a. 29 Savage. Next month I'll be 30 Savage.
Oh, man. You're still a spring chicken. I mean, you got like 1 year on you, but damn.
A couple of olds.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you're all of 26 now, aren't
sure
you?
Sure am. I'm an old man now, too.
Yeah, you're trailing right behind us.
You are. You're no longer... You're in the back half of your 20s,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, closer to 30 than I am to 20. It's a
scary place.
Do you have a living will? You should look into that.
This is Nelson. Nelson the Mayan. Peacing out.
What? All right. All we get is Nelson the Mayan? Come on.
Nelson the Mayan, a.k.a. Radio Ramon, the Cannabis Commie, El Comandante de Cuscatlan. Peacing out.
There we go.
Thank you.
All right, until next time.
Bye, folks. Till next time.
Fear of a Border Planet is a podcast written, produced, and edited by the hosts, Nelson, Ramis, and Kerry. Please subscribe to Fear of a Border Planet on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you like the show, please leave us a rating or a review. Tell your friends to search for Fear of a Border Planet wherever they get their podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Border Planet Pod, or visit our website at borderplanetpod.wordpress.com. Fear of a Border Planet does not own the rights to any music featured here. If you're a studio bigwig who does own the rights, and you believe our inclusion of the music is not fair use, please send us a politely worded cease and desist. The views expressed in this pod are solely those of the hosts and our agreeable listeners, not of our employers or the feds. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. Catch you later. I'm sad.